wanted to be that premier club. We had guys that believed in each other and worked together. We took a lot of responsibility on ourselves to really see the Vikings as a contender.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome in. It's another edition of Skol Stories. I'm your host, Mike Wobschall, coming to you from TCO Studios at Winter Park with a super cool edition of Skol Stories tonight, because we're going to go back to the Purple People Eaters era. We have a conversation with Vikings legend and Hall of Famer Carl Eller. He's going to be our guest in a little bit here on Skol Stories. But first, I'm going to introduce you to the man who interviewed Carl and had this conversation with him and got into so many cool things about Carl Eller's past and also what he's doing right now. That is Craig Peters. He is our senior most full-time writer with the Minnesota Vikings. In fact, he's coming up on the two-year anniversary of his hire. Aren't you, Craig?
It's been a fantastic 2 years.
And part of the fantastic 2 years has been getting to know better the history of an NFL team.
Absolutely.
And you got to know Carl Eller quite well over the years, and your interview with him is going to be what constitutes Skol Stories tonight. Now, Carl, the unique part about him as a Purple People Eater is he played collegiately at the University of Minnesota and became a pro for the Minnesota Vikings. So that's kind of the unique twist that he has on the Purple People Eaters, but you got into a lot more with him. What did you like about this conversation?
Oh, it's so great to connect with Carl Eller and revisit those glory days and just how great this legacy of this franchise is because of the people that helped build it. Mm-hmm. And they all went on to leave legacies after their playing careers, too, when you think about those players. And Carl is just a fantastically nice guy.
Yeah.
Very, very friendly. Love the way he tells stories, too, that are coming up. We went all the way back to when he was drafted by the Vikings. He really loved Minnesota, coming from North Carolina. It was mid-60s and kind of a lot going on in that era. So mm-hmm. when he got here, he was really welcomed and loved it and really wanted to stay here.
Yeah, you guys get into training camp stories.
All the way back to Bemidji.
Yeah, and then as you've termed it, he truly is a sack artist because right now he's into art, right?
That's right, yes. So he transitioned nicely. So the same hands that mauled quarterbacks 130 times have created these beautiful set of bowls that are now in US Bank Stadium.
Yeah. Well, Vikings fans are excited about the current defensive line because of the way they can rush the passer, and that's because Vikings fans from long ago were excited about the Purple People Eaters. So that's the voice of Craig Peters. He is kind of our alumni expert here on staff, has a great relationship with a lot of our alumni, including Carl Eller, a Purple People Eater. Here is Craig's discussion with Mr. Eller.
Carl Eller, Hall of Fame defensive end, number 81, Vikings career leader in sacks. Welcome.
Well, thank you.
Born in North Carolina, but you arrive in Twin Cities, University of Minnesota, and then an opportunity to stay in the Twin Cities. How did this area become your home, and what was it like to have your career last here so long?
Well, you know, I came here from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, to go to University of Minnesota. It was quite a transition for me. The culture was almost totally different, and the University of Minnesota was like one of the premier schools, and obviously still is, and I was just really attracted to that.
You get drafted by the Vikings, you guys, 1964, I believe, first winning season. What did the area kind of respond to that success? And then it was the precursor to even greater success.
Well, I really, like I said, I loved my career at the University of Minnesota, and I loved the area. And I did want to stay in Minnesota, and I wanted to be a Viking. They weren't, at that time, they were just only a few years old, but they were the hometown team. And I thought that I could make the team and be part of the team, and that's what I thought. But mostly it was wanting to stay in the area and to be a Viking.
You arrived the same year as Jim Finks. What's the relationship like with you and him over the years here?
It took me a while to get to know Jim Finks, but I was impressed with Jim Finks, and I thought he was a straight shooter kind of a guy, you know, he'd tell you something, and that's pretty what he meant. You know, you didn't have to agree with it, of course, but, you know, that's kind of what, you know, he was kind of a man's man, I thought. He was honest and straightforward.
That helped a little bit when you found out that Fran Tarkenton was going to be traded in 1967. What was the player reaction to that? And then it wound up paying off with a load of picks that kind of built the core of this team for the 70s, and then Fran was able to come back.
Well, I was kind of surprised that when Fran left, we were still on the, you know, building. And, you know, I mean, Fran was our quarterback, and I really didn't like that, obviously, very much. You know, I thought, you know, we had a better chance with Fran here. And you know, it was one of those things, and I think we had a couple of interim quarterbacks, and finally we got Joe Capp, you know, that came in. So it worked out really well, and we built up, the defense really built up strong, and so I think it added more pressure with Fran gone on the defense, and that probably in the long run really helped us.
A major part of one of the most intimidating front fours in the history of football. What was it like to see you guys grow in and become such a powerful force?
Well, it was the kind of thing that, you know, individually we were teammates, obviously, and it was a good team. We felt like we were building. We felt like we were individually adding to it. I don't think that we saw ourselves as a unit really until we really started to gel as a unit and really work together. But as we did, though, there was a lot of pride that went with that. And it was a lot of pride in being, you know, the Purple People Eaters. And, you know, and Jim and I had a slogan, meet at the quarterback. And then Alan joined us and brought the pressure up the middle. And Larson was our Marine guy. You know, he was our, you know, catch everything else that we missed. So it was a good combination. And we had a good relationship with each other off the field. So it was great. We had a lot of pride. I think that that's what it was, the pride in ourselves as a unit.
Alan described a foot race to the quarterback, and you didn't want to be last.
Well, that's pretty much true. We would, you know, it was a strategy of the game. Well, the big thing, you know, is like about football, it's fundamentally a game really of science or math or whatever you want to call it, because you have to get them in a position to throw the ball. So our key situation in the beginning of the game was to put them in field position, to put them down, to get ahead of them, even if it was only by a few points, and the pressure would build as it went on. So once we got them in that position, it was like we just cut loose, you know, and that was fun.
I've read that Fran Tarkenton wasn't too happy about going against you guys when he was with the Giants. What was that like?
It's funny because we did play the Giants when Fran was quarterback there. And I remember we played him up at Giant Stadium in New York. And I still chuckle about it because I had seen him do this to other defensive lines and defensive players, you know, a number of times. And then I was in on him and I was chasing him and I was going to sack him. And he did that little twirl around on me. It was just like I had to do everything I could just to keep from laughing because he had done it on me. I was just so hilarious, you know.
You guys are able to really connect with fans in a certain way that just kind of launched the endearing factor. If you look around this area, the fans are fantastic, and that's largely in part to the connection that the older family members and their families were able to form with you guys. What is that bond here?
Well, you know, it was Minnesota, you know. I mean, we had to play in the cold. The fans had to come out in the cold. You know, there were times when I would be on the field and I would go like, oh, my God, it must be awful sitting in those stands. So we knew they were faithful. And it was a time when that was the topic of the week. And Monday depended on how we did on Sunday, you know, and people were miserable and we didn't know about it, you know. And it was fun for us because we felt like they were part of us and we were part of them. And they loved the identity, the cold, the air coming out of your nose and the hard feels and they were in their snowsuits, and it was just, it all fitted together. It was, we really were a combination.
More of our conversation with Carl Eller coming up after the break. Before we go, want to invite you to join host Mike Musman along with Vikings defensive end Everson Griffin, fresh off a 3-sack performance against the Carolina Panthers, for Vikings Country this Thursday at 5:30 p.m. at Carboni's in Lakeville. You could win great prizes from the Vikings and Miller Lite, including tickets in the Miller Lite Lounge at U.S. Bank Stadium. Visit Vikings.com/Vikings Country for schedule and locations. And for more Skol stories, stay tuned. Welcome back, everybody. It's Skol Stories, and I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw. More with Craig Peters' conversation with Carl Eller coming up. But first, brand new exclusive inaugural season gear has just arrived at the Vikings locker room store, now open at U.S. Bank Stadium. For novelty items and apparel, visit the official Vikings locker room store at Mall of America, U.S. Bank Stadium, and online at VikingsLockerRoom.com. Let's get back to one of the best Vikings of all time, Purple People Eater, Carl Eller.
You had the unique perspective of training camps in Bemidji and Mankato. What are a couple of your memories, some of the lighter moments from a couple of training camps?
Oh, well, there were a lot of lighter moments. And there were lighter moments in both, but I spent my rookie year in Bemidji. And one of the things they do is they have this rookie, I don't know what they call it, some rookie initiation towards the end of camp. And it was my first camp, obviously, and other rookies, Lonnie Warwick and other guys up there. And so these veterans, they played this dirty, rotten trick on us. They go out, they say, well, we're having a party for you guys. We were up to their scheme. Yeah, sure, they're going to give us a party. They really love us, right? So we says, we don't think this is a party we want to go to. So we actually sneaked out and we tried to hide in the theater. And I don't know, you know, I think there's like one theater in Bemidji at the time. So, you know, we're in there. We're not necessarily interested in the movie. I have no idea, but it was where we could go because there were a few hangouts that they know they'd look for us. And we ended up there. And then so next thing I know, these guys are coming. They come into the theater. They let them in. They didn't have to pay. They says, we're here to collect our guys. And so they come in, they go, hey, we're having a party for you guys. Don't you guys want to come to your own party? It was funny. So we ended up, you know, going to the party because we had kind of the night off, no film or anything. So these guys were saying they planted these seeds in us. We were so gullible. It's just, it's crazy. So they said, well, hey, Van Brocken was a coach then. And says, Van Brocken knows that we had this was a rookie night, so you know, he's going to come around and do a second bed check, so don't lock your door, right? So we go for this, right? So in the middle of the night, these guys come around with buckets of water, and they squish us with full waste baskets full of water and just drench us in our beds, and the beds are all wet and everything. Oh, it was like so funny, man. And then we were, then they ran into their rooms and locked the door, and we could hear them just laughing behind the door. It was like, it was a crazy, that was the most ridiculous thing I can remember, but it was all fun.
That sounds like something that Jim Marshall might have organized.
Well, Jim was my roommate. I don't think he organized it, but he was probably in on it for sure.
What was it like for the two of you to room together?
Well, Jim was a leader, and he was kind of mischievous too. So this is like, he knew how to bend around all the rules. So it was kind of fun to follow Jim around. I learned a lot of things from Jim, you know, and not sure they were all good things. But the point is that Jim was fun. And he was certainly a dedicated ball player. And, you know, he'd give his all, you know. And he was a great guy. He was a great guy. And he really understood the game. You know, he really was committed to the game. He knew what it took to win and how you had to give yourself. And so he set a standard, you know, and that there was nothing less than that. And that's what I admire, I think, probably most about Jim, is he was always the leader.
1967, in addition to changing quarterback and the arrival of Alan Page, you also have the arrival of Bud Grant, and you were able to play for him for more than 12 seasons, I believe. What was it like to play for Coach Grant?
I think that coaches and players, they adjust to each other, you know, to their personalities. And Van Bronckhorst was very different, you know, in his approach to the game and his style. But you adjust to that. And Bud was very different. And so I think at that point I had kind of adjusted and adopted to Norm's style, and I knew how it was. And I think I probably had some loyalty and some allegiance to Norm. I didn't like Bud's style right away, you know, because it was all disciplinary and it was all this, and you got to do it this way, and you got to follow these rules. And I'm going like, oh, crap, you know, this is just ridiculous. And so that was a lot of bending, you know, it was a lot of, you know, the stuff that Bud had to do. And I think it was with everybody, because everybody had kind of gotten used to that, you know, almost a foot loose and fancy free. We were disciplined to a certain point, but there was a lot of areas where we didn't have discipline. And I think guys, when Bud came in and tried to enforce all these rules and all this discipline, we were like, oh man, this guy is weird. And that's when I think we started calling Bud. We had a name for him. I don't know. It was like, I don't know, Gray Eyes was one name, but we used to call him, it was like an out of space name or something, because he was just totally, he just seemed like he was not in touch with us at all. He had his thing. It was like some spaceman's name we had for him, like an alien. This guy is like not from this planet, we would say. But, you know, eventually we came around. We saw his methods, and once we did, it was great.
First playoff season in 68, first playoff win in 69, go on and win the 1969 NFL Championship and begin the stretch of runs to the Super Bowls.
I think it started with Bud coming there. We were close. I think we lost the first playoff game. After that, we had confidence in ourselves. We felt like we belong in the playoffs and we could win. And that was our goal, you know. So I think that really set the standard for us. And we began to believe we were no longer the Vikings that we had been before. We were not pushovers. We were contending teams, and we wanted to be that premier club, you know, and that was certainly true with our front four. And the idea was that I don't think we had a lot of talent, but we had a good solid talent. You know, we had guys that believed in each other and worked together, and we took the front four. I think was part of it. Was that we took a lot of responsibility on ourselves, and that leadership role was to be a championship team, to really see the Vikings as a contender.
Post-career, you've become so involved in the arts. The execution that you've done is on display in U.S. Bank Stadium. What's it like to have contributed to the legacy of the franchise in one way and then have another opportunity to remain with it?
Well, I think that's phenomenal, you know, and you're absolutely right. I mean, this is a whole new way and a whole new era. I think it says a lot about the organization that I could contribute in another way, another part of me, and another facet of me. I could do something like so totally different, but yet be part of it. You know, that is just, it's kind of unreal, really. And years later, too, you know. But the artwork itself is an expression, and I love the artwork. And when I think about it, it's an area that I really would love to have developed, you know, to have become a real artist in this medium. And not that I would take away from my football or any of that, but I see that the art, it gives me pleasure, but I see it as a way of expression. And I know you were talking with Alan Page, and you'll talk with Jim, but Alan and I thought that football was an art. Alan, you know, he's very matter of fact, and so he goes, it's just a game or whatever. But I think there's a comparison or similarities there. It's a way of expressing yourself. And I like that I can take my creativeness and place it in my art.
I don't know if you know this, but he did use the term that there is kind of a hidden art to the game. So maybe I don't know if that's your influence on him.
Maybe he's warming up a little bit. Maybe he's warming. After all these years, he's finally warming up a little bit. Yes, I don't know that he will totally ever admit, you know. But Alan's a great guy, you know, and I really admire him and what he's done. I just think he's just a phenomenal person, and it was obviously fun to play with. And all of these experiences were like great experiences, you know, like just with the team and with the individuals. And so it's been a great time.
I'd love to know a little bit more about the lakes that we have here in Minnesota, where your inspiration for the set of bowls, but like your process of getting it to that point. Like, you really had to be innovative with some of your techniques because of the weight. I mean, these hands that were so detrimental to quarterbacks can create something so beautiful and something that people can enjoy so peacefully.
The two kind of go hand in hand. It was just like when I was working with the clay, I could really dig into the clay. And as I began to dig into the clay, I began to see the clay form, and it would give me forms and shapes and things like that. And it would start to develop into something. And the thing that I really liked about it, or I found myself doing, was that I would start out with a project or start out with an idea, but it would evolve. And I'd kind of sort of steer it along the path that I wanted it to go. But also there was another energy that was kind of, so it was like a combination. So it was like I was putting my energy into it, but it was like there was a force within the bowl, within the clay, that says, okay. And it would show me something, and I'd go like, oh, that's really neat. I like that. And then I'd have to, so if I got it that way and it wasn't what I wanted, it's not going, I says, well, what can I do to make this work? You know, so it was challenging. And also, they were not repetitive. That was the challenge, was to make something different and unique. And so a lot of the ideas actually came through working with the bowls, and the final product came actually through. And in order to get to a finished product, I had to create, I had to be innovative in making it work. You know, so that was really fun part.
What do you think of the new stadium?
Oh, I think the new stadium is exceptional. And it really is a credit to the Wythe family, and it's a credit to the Viking organization. You know, I know they had offers to do it many other places, but I think that the stadium, because I live in Minneapolis, like I said earlier, I live here. I love Minnesota. I've continued to live here right in Minneapolis. And I think it adds to the whole area. You know, I think it really complements the area, and it complements the people, because it's a nice, you know, building. The engineering that went in there is like so fantastic, and the where it's placed, it's part of the city, you know, and it kind of dominates in one specter. But I don't think it dominates in the sense that it takes away from anything. I think it adds to it. It kind of completes it. And so when you see it in connection with downtown Minneapolis and all that, and how it connects, I just think it's very impressive. I think it's like the Champs-Élysées, you know, it's like now you got this one big thing, and it's like it leads to all of the activities in the city. So that little promenade, you know, from like the stadium to like the heart of downtown. I think people are going to enjoy that more and more as time goes by.
Hall of Famer Carl Eller and an accomplished artist, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Craig. It's been my pleasure.
That's an awesome conversation with Purple People Eater, Vikings legend and Hall of Famer Carl Eller, done by Craig Peters. Craig, a lot of similarities, as we mentioned at the top of the show, between the Purple People Eaters, in the 60s and 70s and this current group working for Mike Zimmer right now. Now, that's a lofty comparison because those guys, the Purple People Eaters, did it for, you know, more than a decade. These guys are just getting going under Mike Zimmer, but there are some similarities in terms of style and even some production now.
Oh, that's absolutely true, and I think it was so fitting that the Purple People Eaters were at the coin toss to open U.S. Bank Stadium.
Yeah.
And then when you hear Carl describe how they wanted to put teams in bad field position and then let loose, I mean, does that sound familiar?
It does. Vikings opponents have started inside the 20 13 times. Zero scores.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And something that you and I and Lindsay and Eric and the VEN crew have been, that's been very rich content for us. We love that. And Vikings fans, they love their 1998 style Vikings, the Randy Moss, Chris Carter, high scoring, that whole thing. But they really, really love defensive football, don't you think?
That's something special. 13.3 a game right now.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. So a little bit of a throwback style football team for your current Minnesota Vikings, looking a little bit like the Purple People Eaters of old. So thanks, Greg. Your conversation with Carl Eller, very good. Thanks for contributing that.
Absolutely. Glad to.
All right. That's it for this edition of Skol Stories. On behalf of producer Nate Vaughn, I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw. We thank you for listening, and we invite you to join us next week when another edition of Skol Stories is coming at you.